Hey everybody, Brian McClanahan here. The woke madness in history education is off the rails. Well, how do we change it? McClanahanacademy.com. And because you listen to this podcast, if you use the coupon code PODCAST at checkout, you get 25% off every day, all day, 365 days a year on every class at McClanahanacademy.com. So go to McClanahanacademy.com, use coupon code PODCAST at checkout, and get a real history education at 25% off. If you like this podcast and you want it without advertisements, head over to patreon.com and become a member of the Brian McClanahan Show. For $10 a month, you get all the podcasts ad-free, including video, and you also get a special Q&A podcast. I'm only going to answer your questions, your listener-generated episodes, through those Q&A. So, head over to patreon.com. Get this podcast ad-free, no ads, not even things like this, and you really do help support the Brian McClanahan Show with really cool stuff on the back end. If you follow me for some time, you know I write a lot about the South, and my book, Southern Scribblings, is a collection of many of those essays. It's a great book. You're really going to want it. It tells you why I think the Southern tradition should be preserved and why it should be respected. Get Southern Scribblings at Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, wherever books are sold online. You're really going to love it. Has mental illness infected American politics? Sounds like a rhetorical question, but we're going to talk about it on this episode of The Brian McClanahan Show.
It's time to think locally and act locally. Welcome to The Brian McClanahan Show.
Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. Glad to talk on the program. Very glad to be here. Well, we had a real interesting scene over the last week at the Trump trial in New York City. Had all kinds of stuff going on, including a really distressing situation, the self-immolation of one of the protesters, which was horrible. But is this kind of mental illness infecting American politics? I think the short answer is yes. The question is, of course, larger than this. How do we stop it? And we know the left, as I've talked about on this show before many, many times, is the most destructive force in the history of Western civilization. You want to look at anything that's torn down, any of the violence really that's perpetrated by any political faction, it's going to generally be on the left. Think about the most destructive revolutions in the history of the West. Well, you've got the French Revolution, the left. You got the Communist Revolution in Russia, the left. Even if you go beyond that, you've got the revolutions in China, that's the left. You have essentially, if you want to say that the Nazi government, the Nazi regimes, the Mussolini regime, these are generally kind of moving around the, it's not a spectrum, but the political circle closer to the left. I mean, all of these people are mentally ill because they're all ideological. That's the situation. Really, ideology is the infection. It's the disease. It's the cancer that creates all of this nightmare because people will start thinking in terms of utopian ideas. Well, government should be this way. Society should be this way, et cetera, et cetera. And they start acting on that. And when it doesn't meet those needs, if they've already become so mentally ill that they have to somehow make this happen, they become violent, either to others or to themselves, which is essentially what happened with this crazy guy there in New York City when he lit himself on fire. This is the problem. And what's creating it? What's creating all of this? The opportunity for power in the center. The French Revolution had the French government was a unitary state. There was no way for people on the fringes to try to carve out little areas for themselves so they could resist the power of the king. The king had all the power. The king was the state. So you have to topple the king. You look at Russia. Well, Russia was generally centralized. You had the czar. I mean, it's a despotic government. You take that out. Now, the Russians, interestingly enough, the USSR was a union of Soviet socialist republics, right? So it's a These Soviets were essentially cities or smaller republics. So the idea was that you had some kind of decentralization in the Soviet Union, which really wasn't true. But it was undergirding the system. And this is why When the Soviet Union fell apart, the Baltic states were able to bolt. They could secede. They did it before, really, the Soviet Union fell apart, because it was written into the Constitution. So they had a much firmer understanding of decentralization than what some of the other Western states had. You look at the Nazi government. What was it? It was centralized power. The Mussolini regime in Italy, centralized power. They wanted to recreate the Roman Empire. You look at the Mexican Revolution, right? I mean, you have a federal situation in Mexico, but it was centralized power. This is what's happening when you look at these massive left-wing movements. It's an ideological push to centralize power and to create a society that exists only in their head. And it creates mental illness. Or it's created by, in some ways, mental illness too. So what happened in New York City and these people doing these really strange things? But that's just one example. At least they're doing this to themselves and they're not taking it out on other people, because that's also a situation with the left. Well, they're not just going to take care of themselves, which, I mean, at the end of the day, if that's all the person they're going to hurt, I mean, it's grotesque and horrible, but they're not taking anyone else out with them. The problem with the other lefties, though, most lefties, is that they're going to go after other people, as this piece by Jonathan Turley points out. The real solution to all this, as I've said before, is decentralization. You have to have flexibility. You cannot have one-size-fits-all government in Washington, D.C., because it's going to create a situation where people are going to be upset and they're going to do crazy things. And we're living in a world, just like we were in the 1850s, as we were seeing much more of a push for centralization, at least in theory, we're living in a world where people think they need to foist their political ideology on other people and make them live like them. It's remarkable how dangerous this is. And when you have a government, the largest government in the history of the world, that spends more money than any government in the history of the world, that has the largest military in the world. I mean, these are things that are very, very dangerous, ultimately, for liberty, for security of the people domestically. We don't think that. Military keeps us secure, does it? Can it be used against you? We've militarized the police. We've militarized the federal, we weaponized the general government against citizens with some of the bureaucracy, the IRS, the FBI, the ATF, whatever it is, OSHA. Take your pick of even benign things like OSHA. It's weaponizing the government against citizens because, well, you got to do this, write all this stuff out. You're going to get all these fines. We've weaponized government against citizens. We've created these swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance, as the Declaration says. That's what we've done. All in the name of some ideology, some principle that needs to be defended by a group of people who think these are the things we need to do. We've got busybodies running America. That's the issue. Busybodies running America. Now, this piece by Jonathan Turley is interesting, and I think he gets a lot of things right here. Jonathan Turley, this is at The Hill. Jonathan Turley, of course, a legal scholar. Someone who kind of, I mean, he's seen as conservative, but he's really not. He's not a conservative. He just is very critical of the left for all the things that they do, and rightly so. Which is what makes him interesting. The left can't stand this guy because he exposes all of their dirty deeds. He's really a muckraker in the purest sense. He also is critical of the right, too. I mean, maybe he's more like a libertarian. Nah, I mean, not really. One thing about Turley, which when I first ran across Jonathan Turley, he was talking about secession and how maybe Lincoln's response to secession, the heavy-handed policies, was dangerous. He wasn't in favor of the idea. He wasn't in favor of the South, but he was against Lincoln, which is, of course, consistent with being suspicious of highly centralized power and unconstitutional, illegal power. So let's get into this. He says, the scene outside of the New York courthouse holding the Trump trial has become a microcosm of our deep political divisions and rage this month. Images of citizens screaming at each other from across security barriers have played out nightly on news programs. That is, if you watch these news programs. I haven't seen one of these, but I'm sure it's happening. I mean, you've got Trump people, you've got anti-Trump people. Really, I'm curious, are there really any Biden people or just anti-Trump people? And I think that's what we're running into in American politics. Biden was convenient because you had anti-Trump people. And there really wasn't anybody out there that inspired the Democrats. Look, there were Obama people that Obama inspired them, and they fainted at rallies and other things. Biden? No, there's nothing of that. I mean, the real cult of personality in America is Trump v. Obama, not Trump v. Biden. That is the split. And we know Obama's running the show behind the Biden White House. I mean, those are his people in the administration. He's calling shots clandestinely or maybe overtly, and Biden really doesn't care. Biden's shown he doesn't really know what's going on in his administration. I didn't say that. I didn't do that. I didn't issue that policy. His administration just does it. We really have seen the institutionalization of the bureaucracy, and it just does whatever it wants now. And even the president can't control it at times. You've got people that just do things. That was the deal Biden cut. We'll make you president. You just be quiet, tell you walk where we tell you to walk, say what we tell you to say, and then you can go sit in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and do whatever you want to do. And, you can put President of the United States on your tombstone when you die because we gave this to you and we run the show. I think that was the deal. So, yeah, I mean, there's people going nuts at this Trump trial. And he's saying this is a microcosm of America. I mean, maybe online. Hey, look, in your everyday life, do you go around shouting at people that don't think like you? No. This is the crazy thing about it. Most people just, yeah, all right, that guy next to me, he's a supporter of this or that, whatever. This person's this way, yeah, whatever. I mean, most people just think that way. They're like, yeah, okay, man. All right, well, let's talk about football or let's talk about something else. I mean, people do this stuff. This is what most people, most civil, insane people do on their regular basis. Yeah, I don't think that guy doesn't think this way or that way, but, okay. Whatever. This is what most civil, insane people do, but we've got, as Turley is basically insinuating here, we've got insanity now running the day when you have these, and it's all driven by media. It is driven by media. It's driven by people wanting to get on TV, wanting to get on social media, wanting to have these things. But few were prepared for what occurred Friday night when a man threw flyers in the air, poured a flammable liquid on himself, and lit himself on fire. Some immediately rushed to use the incident to fuel their own rage. On the far left, postings and comments declared MAGA supporters were lighting themselves and MAGA terrorists just set himself on fire. Well, we know that wasn't true. All the information's come out. This guy was a far leftist. It was a Bernie Sanders supporter. I mean, he was a nut, right? He was a leftist nut, which is the point. The lefties are usually the most violent, and it's a mental illness. It really is. Look, ideology is a mental illness. And it's not based on, these people are principled. It's based on the conception of a society or a world that doesn't exist, and you have to try to fit everything to that. It's a mental illness. For many, it seemed a fact too good to check. Even after the police and the fire officials explained that the material distributed by the man did not seem to relate to the trial, journalists pushed for a connection to the pro-Trump protesters. Officials reported that the flyers concerned wacky conspiracy theories related to schools and other matters. The political views of Max Arzelio, 37, of Florida, are still not fully known, but does it really matter? Well, of course they are fully known. You've read it. You've seen it. You've seen his videos. What should be clear is that he was a deeply disturbed individual. That's an understatement. Yet even self-immolation may no longer be treated as per se evidence of mental illness. In today's politics, even setting yourself on fire can be rationalized. And this is the crazy thing. We've done that with all kinds of things in society. Why not political violence? Even to yourself. I mean, we can lop off body parts, and that's seen as perfectly normal now. Right? I mean, this is what happens. It's all normalized. We normalize everything, and the left is the driving force in that. Just normalize everything. I mean, We can rationalize all of this. Sure. That's why rational thoughts, the rationalization or this idea of logic that comes out of the Enlightenment is maybe kind of dangerous at times because it leads to stuff like this. I mean, this is where John Dickinson said in the Philadelphia Convention, experience must be our only guide. Reason may mislead us, right? These are supposedly reasonable things or reasonable conclusions, but reason creates innovation and creates all kinds of dangerous problems. An event was held recently at UCLA in which two psychiatrists appeared to rationalize self-immolation in the cause of people in Gaza. Ragda Izzar and Afaf Mustafa were reportedly discussing the self-immolation in front of Israel's embassy of Airman Aaron Bushnell in February to protest Israeli policies. It was referred to as a revolutionary suicide on the panel of depathologizing resistance. UCLA's Izzar stated that Bushnell, quote, carried a lot of distress. But does that mean that the actions he engaged in are any less valid? She suggested that it's normal to be distressed when you're seeing this level of carnage in Gaza. It's normal. Well, I mean, look, that is true to an extent. When you see that kind of shocking visual image, it does create some mental stress. I mean, all of it does. You see warfare, I mean, all these things. This is tough. These are tough images to see. And it does desensitize you to some of these things. There are some problems with these kind of images, but people have seen this stuff before, and they don't do these kind of crazy things. Mustafa is quoted as saying that psychiatry pathologizes non-pathological reactions to pathological environment or pathological society. It's considered illness to choose to die in protest of the violence of war, but perfectly sane to choose to die in service of the violence of war. Oh, okay. So to protest and die that way, I mean, that's illness, true. Most of the people, there are people that volunteer, but a lot of times these people aren't even volunteering. They're just getting out there. They're forced to do it. That's usually, I mean, we've had a lot of that in throughout human history. People are forced into doing this. There have been a few prominent historical self-immolations and protests, including the famous case of Quang Duc, who burned himself alive to protest the Vietnam War in 1963. However, as laypersons, most of us would hazard to say that it's not normal or valid to set oneself on fire in a protest. True. Yeah, I mean, it's not normal, not really valid, it's crazy. I mean, it is. And I can guarantee if the guy had survived, if you would ask him afterwards, he would say, that was stupid. Yeah, it was really stupid. Really crazy, really, I mean, insane. The dividing line between rage and reason has always been contextual. In my forthcoming book, The Indispensable Right, Free Speech in an Age of Rage, I discuss how we have faced regular periods of rage in our history. How one views rage depends largely on the underlying viewpoint. This country was born in rage with the Boston Tea Party, where a riot with massive property damage is celebrated as a moment of liberation. Now, that's a massive overstatement. Born in rage is incorrect. It was born in protest to unconstitutional legal acts by the British Parliament, but not rage. These people weren't raging. In fact, many of them were very careful about what they did. And massive property damage? They threw some tea into the harbor. Now, there were other events, like in Annapolis, where they pulled all the tea off the ship and then burned the ship. But we're not talking about massive property damage here. I mean, that makes it sound like we're burning down cities and doing all kinds of crazy, nutty things, but that wasn't true, right? So I think Turley, and he's exaggerating. We're not born in rage. There's a Dan Carter book from the 1960s, about the 1960s, The Politics of Rage. I mean, this is the kind of language that the lefties will use to describe people who are protesting some things, or at least in opposition to challenges faced by the left, generally. I mean, you look at the American War for Independence. Was this a leftist thing? Was it a conservative thing? I mean, you could say that George Washington was conservative. John Dickinson was conservative. These were people looking to... Patrick Henry was conservative. They're looking to conserve the things that they had and were being challenged by unconstitutional acts. Turley says, yet self-immolation may now be viewed as somehow valid when used to oppose Israeli policies or other distressful realities. If Azaleo was motivated by his view of a conspiracy among educators or Trump's trial, would his self-immolation also be viewed as valid? Relativism has become deeply embedded in our politics, as we see in the continued efforts to shut down opposing views. A year ago, Stanford University was the scene of a disgraceful shoutdown of a federal judge who wanted to share his jurisprudential views. The university apologized to federal appellate judge Kyle Duncan, particularly after a dean appeared to blame him at the event for triggering students by sharing his opposing views. I mean, this, again, what's happening here? It's ideology. Ideology is rotting these people out. You can't have any opposing views because those opposing views are a direct threat to my ideology and my worldview. And when my worldview is challenged, that is dangerous to these people. You see? But the real danger is them, because in attacking Duncan and saying, even potentially engaging in violence, there's a real threat to person at this point. The situation did not improve after the response of the university. At the time, I criticized Stanford President Mark Tessier Levine and law school dean Jenny Martinez after they declined to punish any students. Instead, all students were required to watch a widely mocked video on free speech. 1 year later, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression released, quote, the Judge Duncan Showdown, What Stanford Students Think. It turns out that 54% of Stanford students believe Judge Duncan's visit should have been canceled by the administration. 75% said that shouting down speakers to prevent them from speaking on campus is acceptable at least sometimes. Shouting down speakers. 54% cancel it. It's a threat to my ideology. It's a threat to my worldview. Now, the real liberal position would be, let's have all of these things out there and see which positions win. The left used to be very confident in their positions. They would think their positions were stronger, more valid. And I would say at times they are correct in that because they're emotionally driven. And when you work with emotion, that's a stronger response than a thoughtful response. Even one that's based on custom and precedent, you're not going to have the same kind of emotional response unless the thing attacking it is going to tear that out, gut it. Then you might have an emotional response, which we've seen over time. But what the left has also figured out is that their policies really don't win at large, writ large, when you start putting them out there and saying, okay, well, we want to be, you know, kind to people, and we don't want to be cruel to people, and we want to have people live and let live. But when you start forcing it on everyone, that's when we have to say no. And we'll just say, no, we're not going to do that. And that's when the left goes to the courts. You see, this is the issue. They can't win in the legislative halls. They've never been able to. What they can do, though, is win in the courts, because they persuaded a judge or two who has power, unchecked power, who can't be challenged to do what they want. That's the issue. Most chilling, almost 40% of the students stated that using physical violence to shut down a campus speaker can at times be acceptable. Of course, the same students supporting violence who silence opposing views will be triggered and traumatized by others preventing them from hearing their own preferred viewpoints or speakers. For these deluded young people, violence is righteousness when used to silence others, but reprehensible if ever used to silence themselves. That's a very true statement. These other, other examples of this. If you were to poll these college students, these people, and say, what would you have been in the 1850s? Would you have been an abolitionist? I mean, probably 100% would say, oh, yeah. I can guarantee you it wouldn't have been that high. Some of them would have been. But I can guarantee you would have had a lot of people that wouldn't. And it's because of the way that people have now decided that certain things are right and certain things are wrong. And that they want to be on the winning side. They want to be the good guys. This relativism is taught by many faculty and publicly discussed, quote, detonating white people, abolishing white people, calling for Republicans to suffer, strangling police officers, celebrating the death of conservatives, calling for the killing of Trump supporters, supporting the murder of conservative protesters, and making other inflammatory statements. He's got a whole bunch of links here, linking out to articles and statements from people on the left who have said these things. Why? Why would they do it? Look at what's underlying all of that. It's about power. Systemic racism, Republican dominance, Trump supporters, police. What these people are afraid of is not having control of the levers of power, and they want to take it. And so they have to eliminate their opposition. They can't do it in their own mind democratically. They can't do it by voting these people out. So they got to do it by taking them out. You see? And if you have these viewpoints, this is where we were in the 1850s. You're a demon. You're subhuman. You're a vampire nowadays. You're a zombie. You're something. But you're subhuman. This is where it gets really dangerous, ultimately, if we start thinking in these terms. We know the left does it. They have to do it. They have to dehumanize the other side because they have to justify their very violent political side. The left is always the most dangerous political organization. Doesn't matter what you call them, the left is dangerous. Always. Violent acts against others or even against oneself in the case of self-immolation can become normal once you accept that others have triggered a response through their conduct or speech. In recent years, we have seen journalists and lawyers throwing Molotov cocktails at police, and some justify it as a form of protest. What we are losing is a sense of clarity or objectivity. Self-immolation is not normal, whether committed by a monk or a madman. Likewise, violence against political opponents is not contextual, but wrong. True. None of this is normal. The alternative is to come up with excuses about how we must not pathologize non-pathological reactions to a pathological environment or pathological society. What a bunch of academic gobbledygook. It's a quote from one of the others, from Mustafa or whatever his name was. And he even says that gobbledygook merely rationalizes the irrational and justifies the unjustifiable. True. This is academic jargon, right? This is what these people live in, these really strange worlds. And if you read some of the stuff that academics put out, if you can get through it, it's horrible. First of all, it's horribly written. It's a bunch of jargon and nonsense. Usually it's just junk. But that's what passes for academic work. I have no familiarity with either Bushnell or Aurelio. But I know that setting yourself on fire or violently attacking others is indeed less valid than alternatives, such as participating in the political system. Before we stretch the spectrum of what is the new normal, we might want to consider the implications of this radical relativism that is taking hold in our political discourse. If you're heading to a rally with matches and a can of accelerant, then you have issues, and they are not political. True. This is true. Now, again, the violence on the left, we've seen the Biden administration try to demonize their political opponents, say these people are all violent. It's the left that drives the violence. What is the left afraid of? Losing power. And when they lose it, they lash out, generally. But ideology is undergirding all of this. It doesn't matter which side you're on. Ideology becomes dangerous. The cult of personality is dangerous. Ideology is dangerous. All of these things are dangerous. The only solution to this, and I've said it before on this show many times, is think locally, act locally, decentralize. Now, you can say, well, this happened at a courthouse, but this guy wasn't even from New York. He's looking at, his protest was against the Biden and Trump fascism. I mean, it was this very strange thing. He's protesting the center in New York because Trump's there on trial. What was his beef? Centralization of power. But, or what was the real problem of it all? I mean, I don't know what his beef was. But centralization of power was causing all of this angst. If we just decentralized, we would see less of this stuff. It's true. You can't do it. I mean, what's the most peaceful place in the world in terms of political peace? And it's been this way for hundreds of years. It's Switzerland. Why? Because everything is so decentralized. They've never been involved in any of these massive wars of the 20th century. They have a very peaceful government. It's peaceful. Everything is decentralized. It's beautiful because the local regional cultures, even some very small cantons, are able to protect themselves from the center. It's decentralization in action. Now, the United States Federation, the Federal Republic, was set up this way and then, of course, bulldozed by the Republican Party ultimately and the nationalists. And now we've got this. This is why Lincoln is a problem. This is why Jackson's a problem. It's why all the presidents really of the 20th century are a problem. Because what we've got is executive government, judicial government. We don't really have legislative government. We certainly don't have state powers anymore that have any impact on the center. Now, some of that's coming back. But the problem is we don't think in these terms any longer. We need to, or we're going to keep having this kind of insanity infect our politics. See you next time on the Brian McClanahan Show. See you then.